The title of the talk is The Four Bases of Mindfulness, or Four Landscapes which we discover, we explore in the practice during this week. Based on the Satipatthana Sutta, which is probably the number one traditional Buddhist text that guides this kind of retreat. So today I would like to kind of present a little bit of a map of what it is we're doing and why we're doing it, to give you a sense of understanding of the process of this week, as well as of minute by minute experiences. And it has to begin. We have to begin with the first noble truth of the Buddha, which is that we want to get off this wheel. Life is not a joke. And I'm reminded of a famous quote from Rumi, who said, "What are we going to do with this life that won't go away?" And it's got a sense in this life of really we want to get off it, or we want to be liberated from it. We sometimes can feel like we're just after pleasure and we don't want pain, and we suffer and then we're better, and then it goes down and it goes up, and it's suffering is mental and suffering is physical and suffering is loss and death and dying and disease and difficulty and Prozac generation. And sometimes we can feel a bit like one of the hamsters, say, in the wheel, or grim, going around the wheel. And we can feel like we want to get off. And it's an important feeling. It's a good feeling. It's an insight that there is something about life fundamentally that cannot really ultimately satisfy us as it is. That we can have a really great life. It's not about enjoying life. It's about something underneath that says this thing keeps going on and we need to find somewhere deeper some sense of freedom. And we often arrive in the present moment, like now, with so much stuff. And I think many of you experiencing it, you just sit quietly, mind our own business, not interfering or hurting anybody, and whoa, the mind goes crazy, the thoughts, we can't stop them, the craziness of the, like the mind is like a musical orchestra with all the instruments playing at once, with no music. Someone needs to write the music and get them to play together in harmony. And it's partly what we're doing here is actually in meditation, is actually allowing things to come home and to play music in the mind. But right now we may be feeling, well, it's just every musical instrument playing at once, cacophonia. And we can't take it personally. It's very important that all of us realize that although we may be experiencing difficulty of every kind, and we may arrive in this retreat full of stuff that we don't want, that is on our shoulders, it's not personal stuff. It is, in the Buddhist language, samsara, the conditioned reality which we have absorbed, whether we like it or we don't like it, from the moment that the egg and the sperm joined together and made us. And from that moment onwards, we are in a stream. And the suffering we feel and the craziness of our life, it's not just us. We don't need to take it personally. It's quite important. Otherwise we think it's I did it to myself. No, you didn't do it to yourself. It's the nature of things to be like that. It's samsara. It's been going on for thousands of lifetimes. So we are made by conditions. We are not somebody. We made by conditions and they make our difficulties. And can we imagine another place? Can we imagine a liberated state where we are in stillness, in harmony, in connection, where we feel we're not carrying anything, where we feel we're not in charge and in control and needing to be in control, and not, neither are we controlled? And can we imagine the third noble truth of the Buddha, the liberated state? And if we can just get a hint of it, we can see something about where we are, where we've come from, and where we are going. A place where nothing needs to be changed, nothing needs to happen, nothing needs to be added or taken away. You can just imagine that place where everything is as it needs to be. Completely different place from I need to change something, fix something, repair something, get off the wheel, stop the world, escape, blah blah. Just another place where everything is in its place and everything is in its quietness and in harmony and things happen by themselves to ease. And that's enough as well, not somewhere else. So we are somewhere between the two. Why we sit during meditation and what the Satipatthana Sutta of the Buddha says firstly is that we can't think our way out of the problem of samsara. We just can't do it by ordinary thought. Because ordinary thought is a product of samsara. So we can't use the ordinary mind to solve the problem of the ordinary mind. We need to find another place. Like Einstein said, you can't solve problems with the same mind that created them. Why we're doing meditation is we are, in a way, developing different tools with which to solve existential life problems. And one of the tools that we use is samadhi. Samadhi is a quality of gathering ourselves to be here. It's a sense of gathering instead of being scattered all over the place. It's collecting ourselves here. That's one of the movements. And the second movement is mindfulness or awareness. Being aware, being awake to what is really happening to us. Both of those are not really in the territory of thought. Both of those are movements of the mind, gathering our consciousness to be here, steady, and sharpening our awareness to be clear and awake to what is really happening to us. So these are the two tools that we use here in terms of mind. So, Satipatthana Sutta is about sati, and sati is mindfulness, being aware, being awake, and remembering to be aware and to be awake. And here's the problem, which is we keep forgetting. Sati means remembering, with the assumption that we keep forgetting. So every time we get lost in thought, we've forgotten that we exist. And then we wake up from the dream of thought, and here we are again. So that process is sati, remembering to be here. And on top of that, it's witnessing. It's being a witness, being aware of what's going on. Like, it's like standing opposite something and watching what goes on, not being absorbed into it. When we look at a movie or we sucked into a story, then we're not aware. We can look at a great movie. Sometimes the image of watching a movie is used to describe sati or awareness, but it's not correct. Because when you watch a movie, you are absorbed in the story. Here, we take a step back. We are not absorbed in it. We are the watcher. We are the audience, the observer, the witness. So that's another aspect of sati, that of mindfulness. So what happens when we witness things is that we just see the way that things arise and disappear. We witness their arising and going. And that's a very important movement, very important understanding. We witness the dynamic nature of reality. Everything, every single thing, arises and disappears. And in the Buddhist language, if we look carefully, we see that everything has leaves no tracks, leaves no traces. It's like a line drawn on water. If we really look carefully, everything, like a thought, or a feeling, or a sound, or a pain even, is like a line drawn on water, it vanishes, it has no history. We afterwards come and make a history out of it. We say, oh, it's here again, oh, it's here again, it's a thing. But actually, we watch carefully, mindfulness shows us the dynamic nature of reality. And we keep witnessing that everything passes and flows. As we do this, sati, we keep remembering and we keep some samadhi, meaning steadiness of mind, then what happens is we begin to understand things differently. And this is, instead of thinking, like I said, thinking about our issues, we look at the world differently, and that is vipassana. Vipassana means seeing clearly, seeing insight. See, that's why we call it tovana, insight. To look carefully and see the way things are. And by seeing the way things are, we'll talk a lot more about this in the course of the next few days. But fundamentally, it's seeing the dynamic nature of our inner life. That things are not stuck. That we don't need to feel closed or imprisoned in the world like the hamster or gear that's going round and round. When we look carefully, we see freedom. We see that things arise and go. We see that things that are difficult for us are not really made of anything. They are just habits that come and go. We move out of the mind of judgment, of difficulty, of pain, imprisonment. And vipassana is the seeing that comes through during the practice of mindfulness and samadhi. There's a nice Zen, one of the shortest and sweetest Zen stories. It was about a guy that was looking all over for the best teaching on spirituality. And he's told there's a man in the Himalayas, he's a very, very wise man, he's a great developed man, go to him. So he went, struggled, walked up mountains, and eventually found the man, who was an old man, and he was carrying a huge bundle of sticks on his shoulder for firewood. He was carrying a bunch of firewood on his shoulder. So he said to him, please, please, I've come a long, long way, I've climbed mountains, I've been weeks and months on the road looking for you, please tell me the secret of the spiritual, of liberation. And the guy, the old man, took the huge bundle and put it on the ground. Peter looked at him and said, "Is that it? Then what?" So the old man picked up the bundle and put it on his shoulder and then walked off. So Vipassana is like that. We learn to drop the load. We learn that it's not really ours in the first place. We don't have to carry a load which is not really ours in the first place. The story. We are full of stories. And the stories, we believe them. And the stories give us so much trouble, like the stories of our biography, our history, who we are, what we went through, the suffering we might have had in the past. Stories and stories and stories. If we see that a story is just a story, it's no more than that. It's not the truth. We don't have to believe it. It's not stuck. It's just a story that is a story about a story. It's just a story. That's it. So it's a small example of insight, of vipassana. So what did the Buddha say then about the practice? In the Satipatthana Sutta, he simply said, well, okay, you want to be free? Sit under a tree, shut up. And before you start, give up fretting about the world. So he actually said, before you start, you need some detour, renunciation. Leave the devil of the world. What am I missing? You just have to reduce that before you can start. If you didn't reduce it when coming into this retreat, you'd be spending your whole time thinking, what am I missing? I want better coffee. I want the meals that I like. I like my bed and I have to sleep in a room with three people. And you'd be obsessed with this and you'd never start. So the Buddha said, look, reduce that neediness. His dokoku. Reduce it in order to be able to sit and practice. Not to get rid of it completely, just reduce that sense of I want, because you can't start without that. And then he said, put your attention all around. Here. Inside, outside. He didn't actually say go in. Sometimes we have this dialogue, you know, meditation is inner and the world is outer. And in order to do meditation, we have to leave the world and go inside. And we do shut our eyes in this tradition, mostly. In others, not. But in the truth, there isn't really an issue there. Inside and outside are one. So the Buddha said, put your attention here, around. And then he introduced the basis of the four bases. The foreground, if you like, of practice. And that's a lot of the Satipatthana Sutta is about the ground of practice. And the first base, or the first ground, that he talked about, is just what we're doing here, the body. And we start with the body because it's the easiest place to practice. It's here, it's with us, it's often forgotten. We generally don't know that we have a head unless we have a headache. We don't know what our feet are experiencing when we walk. We're too busy thinking, I have to catch a bus. So the body is a forgotten territory and is where we start with bringing our attention, the first base, if you like. And I can tell you that all of these bases, by the way, as you develop practice, they're not going from one to the other, that you forget the body, then you go to the next, to the next. You add. So, the Buddha himself, would all his life will be practicing with the body, along with all the other things that I'm going to talk about. So, what he said about the body is to be with the bodiness of the body. The gufaniyut, is that a word? Can you say that? The quality of being a body. Not thoughts about the body. He said it, the Pali language, I don't know, but the translation of the Pali language is the body in the body, is the way the Pali, the ancient language, is written. The body, being with the body in the body. So not thinking about it, not worrying about it, not trying to do anything with the body, not trying to be a perfect body, not changing the body, nothing. Just experiencing the bodiness of the body. Again, it's not the territory of thought. It's the territory of direct knowing, which is sati, mindfulness. And I'm not going to go into it in too much detail, but it's an exploration. It's endless. When you start, it's not just, oh, my boring old body, I know my body already, this hurts, this doesn't hurt, I've got my tummy going like this. It's an endless, endless journey. You can never, ever get to the end of the mystery of the body experience. I have a friend who, his practice is experience of gravity. Koach Nishikha, the weight. That's it. And his years he's been working on this experience, and it's brought him to worlds and worlds and worlds of discovery. The body is a window to the world. So we see things in the body which are not just the body, but, for example, what is khoma, material, what is touch, what's going on, what is the body? We didn't invent it. It came on us. It's the world. The body is the universe. So the more it's not a kind of a Tika Aleph, we have to just look at the body and then we start with the real stuff. The body is the real stuff. Okay? There's a nice story about the Buddha was someone came to the Buddha, actually a god, and said, I was a yogi, a practitioner, until I died, and then I was reborn as a god. I walked for 100 years across India, backwards and forwards, everywhere. I walked and walked and walked, and I couldn't find the end of this world. This world kept going, just like the story of Rumi at the beginning. He said, you know, what do we do with a life that doesn't finish, doesn't end? So I couldn't find the ending of all this samsara, this difficulty, this world. I walked and I walked and I walked 100 years and never found the end of it. And the Buddha said, you were looking in the wrong place. Because the whole truth of the universe is in this 1.5 meter, 2 meter long body. Look here, then you find the end of samsara. Between this and this, you'll find the end of samsara. That's what the Buddha said. So the second foundation is, vedana or feeling. And again, I'm not going to go into this too much because we're going to be doing it. And it's much better to practice than to talk about it. But I wanted to give you the map. So vedana is feeling, or liking and not liking, or pushing, pulling, what I want, what I don't want, what's good for me, what's not good for me. That becomes, the second base becomes an aspect of our practice. So we add that to the body. Don't bother with it now. It's going to come. We're going to give instructions on each one of these bases. in the course of the week. But just to give you a sense of what the Satipatthana Sutta says and where we're going. So that then the body, then we add to it feeling. I like, I don't like, it's good for me, it's not good for me. It's a feeling which is really running our life, by the way. Our whole life is based on pushing, pulling. I like, I don't like. You know, why did we get thrown out of Gan Eden? Because of the eighth poverty rally. The three are good for me, not good for me. The eighth of doubt, I know. Poverty rally, good for me, bad for me. It's getting involved in that. We got thrown out. So that's a big issue for us. What is it to like, not to like? To want, not to want? To push away, to pull, to do, what is it? So that's the second base. And of course, we then deal with pain. Physical pain or emotional pain. And that's part of Vedana. The liking, not liking. And there's nobody here sitting in this room that doesn't have pain somewhere. Every one of us. And so we really need to deal with it and shift our understanding of it and our experience of it. Part of Vedana, in the middle somewhere, is emotions, and we're going to be working with emotions too. And emotions are feelings, but they're adding to the feelings. Bodily change, thought, mind, etc. Emotions are a strong version of Vedana, of liking, not liking. When it's very strong, it takes up all the pieces of the, all the powers of the body. Physiology, mind, memory, everything is collected together into a moment of fear or anger or love or whatever. So emotions are part of this too. And we're going to be touching on emotions. It may seem impossible when we think about emotions to actually meditate on emotions because they seem so strong. But as our mindfulness grows, so we'll find that we have power to deal with the strong stuff. There is a Zen story about a student that said, I'm getting very experienced meditator, I'm practicing for a long time, but I still have difficulty with anger. Anger is still hard and it's still there. So the teacher said, okay, so when you next have anger, the teacher said, okay, bring me your anger and let's deal with it. So the student said, well, right now I don't have anger at this minute. So the teacher said, okay, so when you next have anger, then come and we'll deal with it together. So the student said, yeah, but it will take me 10 minutes to get from where I am to where you are. And in that 10 minutes, the anger will probably go. So how can we deal with it together? He said, you see, anger comes and goes when it wants. Not when you want. You can't even want it. You can't even have it when you want it. It comes and goes when it wants. So that's the way to deal with it. So it's kind of experiencing even emotions. It's so strong and so stuck sometimes. In the eye of mindfulness, it's dynamic and part of the flow. And it can be seen as arising and passing, leaving no track. Align even emotion, a line drawn in water. The third foundation, citta or mind, is the whole world of mind, of akara, todaa, etc. And this includes states of mind, such as tiredness, aifut, or boredom, or sharp mind, dull mind, idiot mind, stupid mind, clever mind. It doesn't matter what mind, any kind of mind. Mind as it just appears. And it's, we may think, well, I don't know how my mind can look at my mind. How is that possible? But of course it can, because otherwise we wouldn't know when we're bored. But we know we're bored. Samenni, misamenni, misamenni. Who is saying that? The mind is knowing that misamenni, bored. So clearly the mind is looking at the mind, and of course we can do it. But as I said before, our experience can be that the mind is a huge mess, an orchestra of instruments all playing at once, a crazy confusion, and yet very powerful, very, very powerful, controls us and controls the world. It's thought, or a view, which is a kind of thought, that makes people go to war and kill hundreds or thousands or millions of people based on a view, which is a thought, which is a mess. Even this thought, I mean, and yet if we believe a thought, we can be in real trouble. So we have to be careful about thought. And all of us are experiencing, even after one day, what a mess and how tricky the world of thought is and how much it controls us. And so it's clearly important to purify the world of thought. And it can be done. And we can slowly, slowly, the mind can make music instead of cacophonia. Small point that I want to express now, because many of you are already experiencing how difficult it is that thoughts take us over, that thoughts have so much power, that thoughts take up all the space of mind. So already many of you are experiencing this and get frustrated at how powerful is the world of thought. And we're going to be working on this more, but just to say at this point, don't try and fight thought. Don't try and get rid of thought, the salek. Don't try, because that's getting into battle with yourself, and it usually generates more thought. I must stop thought, I must stop thought. That's a thought. So it doesn't help us. Instead of that, thought comes, let it come, don't fight it, but also let it go again. See the way that thought is just a wave in the mind that comes and goes. Many times thought will be just at the background, it doesn't even disturb us. It's like in the computer, you have a program that runs in the background. It's just running quietly somewhere inside. And you can feel that and it doesn't disturb you. You can be breathing and there's thought running in the background somewhere. Waves, small waves, little waves. Okay, doesn't matter. It doesn't disturb. And big thoughts that take you over, just try and let them come and let them go and come back to the body. Not to fight them, not to worry about them, to be gentle with ourselves, let thoughts come and let thoughts go. I used the image earlier today in the group of a train, like a thought which usually comes in a train, like Sarsharot, a whole string, because every thought brings its brother. And then the brother brings his sister, and the sister brings his daughter, and the daughter brings a cousin, and then the cousin brings the babies, and it goes on. And so when the train arrives in the on the platform, we're standing on the platform in the tahana, and the thought train arrives, let it leave without me. Let it leave the station without me. I'll stand on the platform and watch it go. And sometimes I'll get on the train, it will happen, and all of a sudden I'm in Haifa and I don't know how I got there. Okay, so we start again. You get off the train as quickly as you can and go back to the breath and the body. Okay, just get off the train as soon as you can. But just knowing that this is the nature of mind, of thought, to be so powerful, it is powerful. We've given it power. A thought is nothing. A thought is like air. It is nothing. It carries a story. The story is a story because we believe in it. The thought itself is nothing. It's just like air. It has no substance. The story seems to have substance and control us, but only because we allow it and we gave it power over the story. We believe in it. So if you understand that, slowly, slowly you can allow stories to come and go and not be controlled by any of them. They're just stories. Packages of story passing by. Not a big deal. So, and the fourth foundation of the four foundations, the fourth foundation is Dhamma. And Dhamma we can translate as truth, or insight, or understanding. And this is where it's also translated as the content of our spiritual life. And so it can be practiced on qualities of being, like qualities of joy or of peace or of energy. It can be many things. The Satipatthana Sutta is really talking, it's talking to monks and advanced practitioners in a way. So the fourth foundation is really contemplating our spiritual life. So all our movements in us. So 1 minute we have more clarity, energy, 1 minute less. Okay, I'm with that. 1 minute we are more joyful, 1 minute we are less. 1 minute we are more peaceful, 1 minute we are less. How is the waves of our clarity, of our freedom? And it has a lot of practices and meditations that are beyond the self, like experiencing the elements in the body, earth, air, fire, water. Well, you can't own the elements, right? Ein Ba'alut on earth, air, fire, water, they are the universe. So contemplating and meditating on the body, on ourselves as the universe. So you cool. And not as my world, my stuff here. So if we contemplate, then that's the kind of thing in the fourth foundation, which we won't really be doing so much in this retreat, but we're going to be touching on it in certain ways. Or contemplating the Four Noble Truths, that is the nature of human suffering and difficulty, and the nature of the liberating mind that can go beyond difficulty, and what it is that gets us stuck. And these kind of contemplations that will are part of the practice, and we will be paying attention to that in the course of this retreat. So the final bit of the Satipatthana Sutta if you do this for 7 days, you'll be awakened totally. And there's a kind of negotiation going on, and the Buddha says, doesn't need a month, doesn't need 10 years, doesn't need a month, doesn't need 7 days.
And that's why we're here for 7 days.
But it is a process of awakening. This practice that we're doing, the Satipatthana Sutta, the practice that we're here for, is not fundamentally about solving our problems. It's fundamentally about waking up and transforming the human being. It doesn't matter if you've come here to the retreat, is it the first time you're here and someone says, go to retreat because it will help you to be a little bit more of a peaceful. So you have a project called to be less worried. It's fine. It's not that you have to, I won't learn here to be less worried because they're only going to be talking all this blah 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 about awakening. It's not that. Being less worried is part of the journey to awakening. But I do want to just clearly express the deeper agenda of this process. It is not just about fixing the human being. It's about awakening. Just sort of put that also in the background as a program. So somewhere in the background, this is really the path that we're going on. And on the way, hopefully, many, many changes can happen to the human being. But if we set our sight, all I want to do in this kind of meditation practice in the spiritual life is just to fix my anxiety or to fix some stress or to get rid of my headache, we're selling ourselves short. Because we're all of us big, big human beings with a huge potential, which we don't even realize how big the potential is of this being in us. No one really told us what a huge human being we really are and what it means to be a human being. We need to discover it ourselves, and that is the agenda standing behind what we're doing. Nevertheless, don't worry if you say, there's all this agenda of awakening and I can hardly follow my free breath before I get disturbed by thought, and so it's not for me. Don't worry about that, because the journey of 1,000 miles starts with a step. And if you have sat here 45 minutes, quietly, steady, watching yourself, you've done a big thing. Even 1 day, 2 days. It's something unusual. It's also not easy. Okay, so that's what I want to say. Thank you very much. And let's just take a few minutes of quietness to contemplate.